Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill here on February 25th. It is after week two of the college baseball season. And I'm here with Dave Serrano and Joe Healy, and we're excited to talk more about college baseball. So how's it going, guys?
Going good, Teddy.
Yeah, I'm good. Good weekend of college baseball. Looking forward to talking about it.
Awesome. Well, you know, there were some series that kind of caught our eyes this weekend. You know, specifically Mississippi State beating Southern Miss. That was the big one. That was the first top 25 series matchup of the year. But again, the top 25 this week largely stayed the same. In fact, the 25 teams are the same as they were a week ago. The order is just slightly different. Vanderbilt remains number one, LSU number two, UCLA number three. That's all unchanged. North Carolina jumped up to number four, and Florida slipped to number five. That's one of the changes this week is Florida endured a bit of a rough week, going 2-3, losing two midweek games before coming back to win their series against Miami. We will definitely get into that a little more later. And then further down in the rankings, Coastal Carolina moves up to 21. Southern Miss, which lost to Mississippi State in Starkville, slides to 23. But still a pretty good week for the Golden Eagles, all things considered, going on the road to a top 10 team and winning a game in what was a very tight and exciting series. So again, the 25 largely remains the same. But while there wasn't much movement in the rankings, there were some very interesting series around the country. And let's just start with this series down in Mississippi in the Magnolia State between the Bulldogs and the Golden Eagles. And coming into it, there's a lot of background here. You know, these were two teams that met in the 2017 Hattiesburg Regional Final. Mississippi State came out on top of that. Then last year, down in Hattiesburg again on opening weekend, Southern Miss swept Mississippi State. Later that week, Andy Cannizzaro resigned as Mississippi State head coach. So there's a lot of drama around week one of the season last year. And I think that left Mississippi State feeling like they had something to prove, that they wanted some revenge going into this year's series. And they did just that, taking two out of three from Southern Miss. They lost on Friday night, 1-0 in 10 innings, a great pitcher's duel. They bounced back on Saturday with an 8-1 victory behind freshman JT Ginn on the mound. And then on Saturday, they edged out Southern Miss 4-3. Tanner Allen provides the walk-off double in the ninth inning to give the Bulldogs the big series win. So, Dave, let's start with you. What do you take away from this weekend for these teams?
Well, first of all, I commend both programs. You know, obviously it's an in-state rivalry, and I commend them both for matching up this early in the season. It's too bad. I wish I could have taken in that series because that looked like it would have been a dynamic series. I would have loved to see TJ Ginn throw. Sounds like he was fabulous. Mississippi State comes out on top in that series and in some close games. But obviously Southern Miss, you know, we talked about this last night when we talked about the top 25. You can't punish them too much because they lose the series on the road. And obviously they're a good baseball team. They're going to continue to get better. But again, kudos to both those teams for in week two stepping up and playing a big series. And I think both programs are going to end up where they want to be towards the end of the year. I think both programs are going to continue to get better. And like I said, I'm really anxious to get to see whether it's on TV or in person, TJ Ginn, because I've heard nothing but spectacular things about him.
Yeah, I mean, Ginn went out through seven innings, just a few hits, struck out nine, walked one, seven scoreless innings. A great start for him. And Ethan Small, the day before, an absolutely sensational start, 13 strikeouts, no walks. Again, seven scoreless innings. Those two guys, you know, did great things for the Bulldogs this weekend and should be really good going forward. And you know, the fact that Small is back this year, I know that a lot was made of some of the returning players in the SEC this year. You know, Jacob Angham on the Bulldogs as well. And LSU, of course, with their trio of Hess, Watson, and Duplantis all coming back. But Small is one of the, you know, he maybe flew a bit under the radar in returning for, you know, turning down the draft to come back to school this year. But having him at the front of the rotation has been big already for Mississippi State. And those two guys, Joe, I know you feel like can, you know, that 1-2 punch can be really, really effective for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, that's a 1-2 punch. It's going to be a problem for other teams in SEC play. You know, with JT Ginn, you know the talent was there, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't click for freshmen. So you came into the season kind of wondering what it would look like for him, and so far so good. And Ethan Small's a guy we talked about a little bit before this season, or I seem to remember having this conversation with you guys anyway, about how he probably didn't get enough credit for being as good as he was last season. And there was some coming into the season, Connor Pilkington was probably the bigger name there. And I think that probably had something to do with it. He flew under the radar a bit, but you know, they were both outstanding this past weekend. So yeah, I think somewhat quietly, I think that's a rotation that's going to be able to put Mississippi State in a position to compete with really any other rotation in the conference. And on the Southern Miss side, I mean, this was kind of the rare series where I think more of Southern Miss after this weekend, even though they lost the series, because of how well they competed. You know, they weren't able to solve Ginn on Saturday, but hey, that's going to happen. But the other two games were just as airtight as possibly could be, and that's a tough place to play, even though I'm sure there were plenty of Southern Miss fans who made that trip. But it's just a tough place to play, and I think there's a scenario where, you know, you could have seen Mississippi State sweep that series or win two out of three, but win the two games in a lot more dominating fashion. So I think Southern Miss really acquitted themselves well in that series, and I think it just kind of reaffirms my feeling about Southern Miss being the class of the Conference USA.
Yeah, I think with Southern Miss, you know, they got a great start from Walker Powell on Friday night. He matched up really well with Ethan Small. He's not like Ethan Small is a bit of a prospect, and JT Ginn has this power arm that, you know, he's an unsigned first rounder. Walker Powell is not really like that. He's just a good, solid pitcher like Southern Miss has had so often over the years. And he really went out and went toe-to-toe with Ethan Small. And he was fantastic for what Southern Miss needed. And I thought Southern Miss, you know, kind of showed off some pretty good arms out of the bullpen. Ryan Oak threw well behind Powell on Friday night. And he did take the, you know, the loss there on Sunday, but, you know, he showed pretty well as a redshirt freshman, and J.C. Keyes pitched very well out of the bullpen, and Southern Miss has some pretty decent, you know, arms they can turn to, and that's without Matt Wallner, of course, the preseason All-American two-way player who is able to hit right now, but is still being held out of pitching due to a bit of a forearm strain. And if Wallner is able to come back, whether that's in the rotation or just providing another power arm out of the pen, that would really bolster this Southern Miss pitching staff that already is looking like it's a nice, solid pitching staff. And then they have the offense. I know this weekend it was held down pretty well by Mississippi State, but they have a pretty powerful offense. And more weekends than not, they're going to score a lot of runs. And so I think going forward, that's a team that looks very dangerous, and it'll be interesting to see how it all comes together for them. But, you know, Dave, a lot of times we talk about, you know, moral wins or whatever, and sometimes people want to write those off. But what do you think going 1-2 and winning the way they won on Friday night, you know, being able to match pitcher for pitcher with Mississippi State, what does that do for Southern Miss now going forward?
Well, I think I'm going to kind of say what I kind of echo what Joe said. I think from a coaching perspective, you don't want to ever walk away and think, well, it was, you know, we could walk away thinking we won because we won a close game Friday night and still lost the series. But I think Southern Miss walks away realizing they can play with anyone in the country. Obviously, Mississippi State is one of the better teams in the country, as is Southern Miss. I think they walk away and go back to the drawing board and realize what they need to work on. And I think they go forward in their conference in a couple weeks, and they believe that they have as much a chance as anyone to win the conference and get back to the regionals. And then it's anyone's game when you get to regionals. So I don't think it's a moral victory, but I think they walk away realizing the fact that they are a good baseball team. They're a good program. They're a program that's been trending up for the last few years. And I probably wouldn't want to be the team that they play next weekend. I mean, I think they're going to go in next weekend and with some swagger and do some damage off of coming off of what they believe in a rivalry game, disappointing losing 2 out of 3 at Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's Gonzaga headed to Hattiesburg next weekend in the not short trip. I want to see Gonzaga's travel schedule for this week, getting from Spokane to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. But that, you know, that's a pretty solid Gonzaga team. But yeah, I can very much see Southern Miss going down, going back home and really taking this out over the next couple weeks before they get into conference play with what should be a really interesting series against Louisiana Tech. But that is getting ahead of ourselves. We will have plenty of time to discuss that over the next couple weeks. So while the Southern Miss Mississippi State series was kind of the headliner of the week with the two ranked teams going at it, there were a couple other intriguing series involving ACC teams that have kind of been premier teams in that conference, but have been a little down on their luck in the last couple of years. And Joe, you were at one of those where Georgia Tech was hosting UCLA, you know, and Georgia Tech has not been in the tournament the last couple years, and they're working to get back, and they have this pitching staff that they can feel pretty good about now, and they've always been able to hit, and they went out and they beat UCLA on a walk-off home run 4-3 on Friday night, and then UCLA responded to win that series in Atlanta. But Joe, just you were down there, what were your impressions from this weekend at Georgia Tech?
Yeah, it was probably the number one thing I was interested in finding out over the weekend is just, you know, what there is to this Georgia Tech pitching staff that's been talked about having better depth than it has in the past. And I came away actually thinking that was the case. You know, they obviously pitched well enough to win on Friday because they did win. You know, Xavion Curry gave them a solid start there. You know, the Saturday game kind of got away a little bit from Connor Thomas, but then on Sunday they got a good start from Brand Herter. And that game kind of just slipped away late when some defensive lapses occurred, and it wasn't, I didn't come away feeling like that loss was on the pitching, if you will. So they've just got some interesting pieces out there. Jonathan Hughes is going to be a big part of things, and you know, it's easy to kind of forget now because he's dealt with injuries and things of that nature while in Atlanta, but was a second round pick coming out of high school for Baltimore and was unsigned, ended up going to Georgia Tech, and it's really just kind of been nothing but hard times for him since he got there, and he really has come on so far this season in his relief work. You know, Tristan English is working out of the bullpen right now, and to me that's one of the biggest keys for Georgia Tech is continuing to be able to use a guy like Brand Herter in the rotation on the weekends to keep English in more of a bullpen role, because I think he's a really good fit for that role, and he shined in the Friday game. He was, you know, he and Hughes both were a big part of that Friday win as much as anything else. You know, the funny thing was Georgia Tech is known for offensive production, and that's really kind of what so far this season has, you know, kind of hamstrung them. I mean, they're hitting 200 as a team right now, just a couple of guys really going. Austin Wilhite swinging it well, Kyle McCann swinging it well. He had the walk-off home run in the Friday game. But it was just kind of a strange series. It was almost like two different series in one. I mean, big emotional win for Georgia Tech on Friday, got off to a pretty decent start against UCLA's Jack Ralston on Saturday, had him on the ropes early. They were getting guys on base, and this was the game I wasn't there. I was in Athens that day, but, you know, kind of went back and watched a little bit of it, and they had him on the ropes. They just could never kind of get that big hit, and then, you know, UCLA on the other side of that coin did get the big hit, and that was kind of the difference maker there. And then from that point moving forward, on the second half of the game on Saturday, they really just couldn't generate any sort of offense. And then Sunday, the offense was very, very quiet for them. So it was really a tale of two series in a way. But I think a lot of that just goes to the fact that, you know, this is a UCLA team that, for all the hand-wringing about it maybe not being a classic UCLA pitching staff, and then on top of that, you have a Ryan Garcia injury. For all that hand-wringing, they really couldn't have pitched it much better so far this season. Team ERA of 0.84. For you keeping score at home, that's pretty good. You know, and it doesn't look like you kind of expect UCLA pitching staff to look. If you're using Trevor Bauer and Garrett Cole as your baseline, which wouldn't necessarily be the right way to look at it, but you can see folks kind of thinking of it that way. This is not going to look like that. You know, you've got Zach Pettway, who's kind of a battler, a solid college pitcher. Jack Ralston's kind of a guy who's been in the program for a few years and really hadn't made that much of an impact, and he stepped in and done a nice job. And then Jesse Bergen's been a revelation as a freshman. I mean, Division I baseball is supposed to be pretty difficult, but so far Jesse Bergen against two teams in St. John's and Georgia Tech that we had in our preseason field of 64 has done a really, really outstanding job. So this is a team that can still pitch. You know, Kyle Mora has been outstanding out of the bullpen, 17 strikeouts and 8 innings of work. Now, he got hung with the loss in that Friday game because he really made one bad pitch. He pitched into his fourth inning of work and made one pitch to Kyle McCann that Kyle McCann hit out of the park, and that was it. But otherwise, he was just absolutely outstanding. And the offense is good, too. I mean, there's a little more depth to this offense this year, it feels like to me, whereas, you know, maybe you thought that maybe it was going to be, you know, Tolia and Strumpf and Idens and then kind of a bunch of guys to fill around. But Jake Pree seems to have taken a big step forward. He's hitting .524 so far this year. Ryan Kreidler hit a home run on Sunday that was absolutely scalded. You know, maybe he's ready to make a leap. And then Garrett Mitchell is a guy who's been hot so far this season. They really didn't get as much from Matt McClain. Now, he hit a home run in the Saturday game, but he's hitting .217 so far this season. But he's a guy you have quite a bit of confidence who is going to come around. Certainly the talent is there, and you can kind of see that talent shine through in spurts. So, you know, I think it was the type of series where you come away thinking more about UCLA than you come away thinking less of Georgia Tech. You know, Georgia Tech's got to get that offense going, but I think there's enough talent there to get it going. Some of the guys who are off to slow starts, like Oscar Serratos, for example, have a track record of success. So it's a weird deal where I came away feeling good about Georgia Tech and that the improved pitching there, but in this series, it just wasn't quite enough. So not too dissimilar from Southern Miss. I still think the Yellow Jackets have the talent to be a regional team, and it wouldn't surprise me if they were a regional team when it's all said and done. But this was just a situation where this is a now a veteran UCLA team that knows how to win and knows who they are and has the right pieces in place, and they just outplayed them.
Hey, I'm looking at Georgia Tech's offense right now, and it's very strange. You have three players, Willite, Goldberg, and McCann, hitting over 300, and then everyone else on the team that has more than three at-bats is hitting under 200. And those are guys like Chase Murray, you know, their junior outfielder who they were looking to take a step forward this year, Cerritos, Tristan English, who's been a big piece for that lineup in the past. You know, they just aren't hitting right now. And you got to figure they will turn it around. But Georgia Tech now sitting at 3-3. They're a bit confusing. I am not entirely sure what to make of them. They, you know, this series loss doesn't bother me, except in the fact that they still aren't hitting at all. But last weekend in the Atlanta Challenge, where they they and a couple other schools down in that area bring three teams in, and then they rotate around the local schools. And they beat UIC on opening day. Then they lost to Richmond, and then they got walked or they walked off West Virginia in 11 innings. So two of their three wins, they needed walk-offs in the 11th inning. And those were the two best teams they faced so far, West Virginia and UCLA. But I don't know what to make of Georgia Tech yet. And I don't know that I'm going to know anytime soon. I am excited to see how they start ACC play because it is not an easy start for them. They are at Miami. They are, and then they have Virginia at home, and then they go to Louisville the first 3 weeks. They have 1 week to get ready for that. And then that's kind of a gauntlet right out of the gate in ACC play. And so I think we're going to find out a little more about Georgia Tech then. But right now, they're still a little confusing, and they've got to get their offense going if to get to where they need to be as a program. What did you think about this weekend?
Well, I'll say this about UCLA. The scariest thing going into this season, and I might have mentioned it in our original top 25, is that if the pitching was the shortcoming with John Savage's background of pitching, then that was a good thing for the Bruins because I knew that they would get better. They had the talent to get good, just inexperienced. I think the Garcia setback actually will help the Bruins in the long run. When he gets back healthy, he'll be fresher later in the year. Plus the fact that John is able to now utilize some of the younger guys and get them experience early in the weekend, that's only going to make the Bruins much better. I'll echo again what Joe said. You know, with all the names that they have in their lineup, when Jake Priest is doing what he's doing at the clip he's doing, and the other guys that were supposed to be just the others in the lineup are functioning now, it makes the Bruins that much better. I've talked to many people on the West Coast that have seen them and have played against them, and they think their team is really, really good. And as that pitching continues to get better and grow up, I think the Bruins are definitely a team that we're all going to be talking about at the end of the season when the eight teams get to Omaha. I think John, the UCLA people, and many people would be disappointed if that isn't one of the final eight teams at the end of the year.
Yeah, no doubt. And UCLA now returning to the West Coast, and they have a couple weeks to get ready for Pac-12 play. But it does seem like UCLA has come out of the gate really strong against two solid opponents in St. John's and Georgia Tech, and the Bruins are in a good spot going forward. Now, I mentioned there was another ACC traditional powerhouse that was facing off against a top-five team this weekend, and that was Miami hitting the road for their rivalry series at Florida, and they won on Friday night. They got a great start from Evan McKendry. They beat the Gators in Gainesville, but then Florida comes back, wins the next two games, wins the series. And as I mentioned, Florida had a difficult week in that they went 2-3. They lost midweek games against South Florida, North Florida, and then they lost to Miami before they kind of righted the ship there over the weekend. And offensively, Florida was scuffling until they dropped 9 runs in the Saturday game. This is one of the criticisms, one of the concerns about Florida coming into the year was just how much impact that lineup had. But when I looked at it earlier in the weekend, some of the guys that weren't hitting for Florida were guys like Austin Laneworthy and Will Dalton, guys you feel pretty good about them, that they were going to figure it out. Brady McConnell, the sophomore shortstop who really didn't do a whole lot as a freshman, was banged up, was going to be a linchpin for this team. He is hitting. And so when I see things like that, I feel like you trust that Laneworthy will figure it out. And if you can get McConnell going, if you can get freshman Kendrick Calleo going, and those two are going really, really well, then eventually the veterans will catch up. And we'll see if that carries over after this this series win against Miami. And as for the Canes, I thought they competed pretty well in Gainesville. I know it's not the series result that they were hoping for, but the way McKendry pitched, Chris McMahon pitched really well on Saturday. Florida was was down late in that game. Those two guys showed very well. And
Miami has started the season pretty well offensively, and that did eventually, you know, the Florida Arms are what they are, and they did kind of contain Miami to an extent this weekend. But I think there's a lot of encouraging signs for Gino Demare in his first season with the Canes. And it's going to be interesting to watch them as they go forward. And like I mentioned with Georgia Tech, you know, they open ACC play in 2 weeks, against the Yellow Jackets at home in Miami. And, you know, they have a chance to get off to a pretty good start in ACC play if they can win that series. That would be big for them. So I think it's like we mentioned with Southern Miss, I think it's an encouraging weekend for Miami, even though for the fifth straight year, Florida comes out on top in this rivalry.
I think the offensive strides have been incredibly impressive, like you mentioned, Teddy. And I think it's, it's a small sample size, sure. We're still talking about a really small number of games, but the struggles have been so profound offensively for Miami over the last couple of years that, you know, it really wouldn't have taken a ton of improvement to make a huge difference in terms of their results. Because, you know, they've always been able to pitch well in spots just along the way. But that just feels like a little more juice there offensively. I mean, obviously Alex Terrell has been the big deal. He's got 5 home runs already. That's pretty doggone good. But they're getting contributions up and down the lineup. It seems to be a team that just, to my eyes, and, you know, I'm not an expert in this kind of body language or anything like that, but it just seems like an offense that has a little bit more confidence, has a little bit more juice. You could tell they felt like they belonged on the field with Florida. It maybe just seems like a group that, that's ready to win this year, and it remains to be seen. They've got a tough road ahead of them, but, to my eyes, it looked like a group offensively that had things a little bit more together this season.
Yeah, I think about that series. I think both teams walked away feeling a lot better. I think with the schedule probably helped Florida. They needed something to generate. They had coming off 2 midweek losses where they really scuffled offensively. And then Miami comes in and they play them and they get 2 out of 3 where the offense did show signs. I think probably the players were probably pressing a little bit more than Coach Sullivan is right now. I think he knows what he has. His team notoriously gets better. He schedules tough usually early on, and they'll get better. But I've heard nothing but good things about Miami, and I'm really impressed by what Coach Demare is doing right now out of the gate. And I think that's a team that's going to continue to get better with the personnel they have, and that they're showing a good start to get going as they head into ACC play. But I walked away looking at that series, and I thought both teams can walk away feeling good about where they're. The direction they're heading right now.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair all around. You know, Miami is it's a young team, and so there are going to still be some growing pains. But I think that there was encouraging signs this weekend, and that they can build on this going forward. And you know, you need to challenge those kids early in the season. And Florida and Miami play this annual Week 2 series, and it's a good measuring stick for both of those teams. And there are a lot of young hitters, especially in action this weekend for both teams. And, you know, Kaeo had a huge weekend for Florida. He celebrated his 19th birthday yesterday with a home run in the win. And, I think that, you know, as these guys get a little more settled in, we'll see what they're really about and, you know, stop pressing. But I think that this was an important weekend, for both these teams and in a rivalry environment and, something that, you know, 2 very talented programs going at it that, we'll see what they have now going forward as we look towards conference play starting in just a couple weeks. So we've talked about, you know, these 3 series involving top 25 teams. And I mentioned that for the most part, there wasn't much movement in the rankings, but that doesn't mean that there aren't good teams, you know, kind of just on the outside of the top 25. Right now in college baseball, we have 18 undefeated teams remaining. 7 of them are in the top 25. That leaves 11 on the outside. And a few of them, you know, are getting close to cracking the top 25. And I just kind of want to highlight a few of these teams that are undefeated after 2 weekends and that are kind of getting moving closer to the top 25. They're definitely on our radar. And I want to start with Tennessee. Dave, I know you were able to get out and see the Volunteers yesterday finish their sweep of Indiana. Tennessee now up to 7-0. They've allowed only four runs this year, and they're really looking impressive through a couple weeks.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, living in Knoxville, I get a lot of information, you know, through seeing their games without seeing their games. And I walked away pretty impressed. You know, the old saying, pitching and defense wins championships. And if that's the case, then Tennessee has a legitimate chance of really moving up the rankings in the SEC this year for the first time in many years. The pitching staff looks dominant, and it really does. It's an older group with some mixture of some really good, talented young men, led by Garrett Stallings on Friday night. He just continues to go out, kind of what he's done, what he carried over from the Cape this summer, went out, punched out 9 on Friday night, walked 0. That's kind of his MO. You know, going into Sunday's game, Teddy, they had struck out 31 guys against Indiana and only walked 2. And their defense had not made an error in the first two games, and the only 2 errors they made on Sunday came from the mound on pickoff plays. So they're doing a fabulous job at taking care of the baseball. They're throwing strikes. They've got good stuff on the mound. Zach Lingenfelter has become very consistent throwing strikes and throwing more than a fastball for strike. Had a great game on Saturday, punched out 13, walked 2. Those are great numbers for him. Will Neely had a little bit of a rough start, and I don't even want to say a rough start. The wind was howling pretty good out to left field yesterday, and during the day games at Lindsey Nelson, the ball can get out pretty easy. Left some balls up. They got out. Maybe one of them was wind-aided. The other two would have probably got out anyway. But when you have a guy like Garrett Crochet in the bullpen and he hasn't thrown an inning yet, came in and just was dominant. Just was absolutely dominant, and took over the whole game on Sunday, which allowed Tennessee to creep back in and eventually win 5-3. But very impressed with them coming out of the bullpen. They've got Crochet right now. They got a young man named Redmond Walsh. That's a left-handed, crafty left-hander that pounds the strike zone. And then they're closing the game with Schultz that has an electric arm. I think Coach Anderson's done a good job of changing his arm, his delivery a little bit. He's 95, 96, and is just throwing darts right now. And why I'm so excited about their pitching staff and their team is that, in my opinion, I'm well aware they've got 2 young men that are freshmen, Camden Sewell and Elijah Pleasance, that really haven't even made impacts yet. And those 2 guys are going to be superstars when it's all said and done. So Tennessee is a team that I've seen now 5 teams play this year and 6 teams play this year. And I think, from what I have seen and what I've heard, Tennessee may be the deepest pitching staff I've seen that's only going to get better down the line. The offense may be a little bit of the Achilles heel for them. I don't see a ton of power. Andre Lipsius has gotten off to a little slow start, even though he had a base-clearing double yesterday, the big 3 runs to take the lead. Not a lot of power. They're going to need Zach Daniels somewhere in there eventually if he could cut down his swings and misses. But they've got a lot of guys who've gotten off to a slow start, and they're still 7-0, and they're throwing the ball pretty good. So I think it looks pretty good for the Vols. They're going to have to keep it going and continue to grow up. But if you have the pitching they have, I like their chances for a long time.
Absolutely, and that's a good Indiana team that they beat. That's a Indiana team that I liked a lot coming into the year, and they very easily handled them there in Knoxville. So that's definitely going to be a team to watch in the SEC this season as they try and return to regionals for the first time in more than a decade. Now, Joe, up in your neck of the woods, you've got Illinois sitting at 6-0. They started with a sweep of the Wake Forest tournament last weekend, and then this weekend went down to FAU and swept that series as well. Needed some late inning heroics in a couple of those games, but the Illini still undefeated, sitting at 6-0.
Yeah, 6-0 start, best since 2015. You may remember the 2015 Illinois team being pretty good. I made a Curb Your Enthusiasm joke on Twitter about pretty good, which got a disappointingly mild reaction from college baseball Twitter. But maybe those Venn diagrams don't cross as much as I would have hoped. So, a really good start. And one of the questions that I had about the Illini coming into this season actually had to do with their their pitching staff and their rotation specifically. Last year, they got really good work from Quinn Snarskis and Andy Fisher and Ty Webber. But my question was, could they kind of replicate that? Because they were all kind of pitch to contact, low strikeout rate, relatively low strikeout rate guys. And that's hard to replicate because, you know, when the ball's in play, anything can happen. And they've kind of countered that in a couple different ways. One was moving Cirilo Watson into the rotation. Watson's stuff looked really good when I saw him in the fall, and it's continued over into the spring. And he's been a nice addition to them. And in his 11 innings pitched, he's struck out 14. And Andy Fisher looks like a guy who, he had some success in piling up some strikeouts when he was at Eastern Illinois in a smaller role. And this year he's off to an outstanding start in that regard, 11 and two-thirds innings, 16 strikeouts. So that right there is kind of remedying that. Now, Snarskis is not off to as much of a good start this season, but those two guys, I think, have kind of been game changers in terms of mitigating my fears, at least, about maybe, pitching to contact being something that might bring them back to the mean a little bit. Now, I have a lot of trust in Dan Hartlib and Drew Dickinson to develop pitching. It wasn't about whether or not these guys could get the job done. It was just that, it wouldn't take much in the way of some batted ball luck for those numbers that they all had solid, three ERAs to be closer to four. And if that's the case, then maybe there are a few fewer wins on the table for Illinois. So they've just done a really nice job as a rotation again this year. Garrett Acton, three saves on the year, has been really nice in a bullpen role. And so has Ty Webber. Ty Webber slides into the bullpen, at least for now. And he's done a really nice job for them so far. So they've got a pretty deep pitching staff. I mean, Sean Leland's a guy, I almost forgot to mention him, but, Louisville transfer, didn't really find a role last year. This year has done a nice job for them out of the bullpen as well. So they've got some depth there for sure. In a rotation, I think, that has a little more of a high-end quality to it than it did last year. Offensively, there's no Brent Spillane, which is, there's really no way around that, but it's just really, really deep. And that's one of the reasons why I was a little less worried about this team offensively, even though they were losing a guy the quality of Brent Spillane, because the depth was there. You've got a guy like Michael Massey, who's proven himself. Jeff Cordy's a nice piece there. Michael Mahalik's a nice piece. And then you had guys who maybe had struggled or just maybe hadn't quite reached their full potential. I think of a guy like Zach Taylor, who was a big contributor at Houston a couple of years, transferred to Illinois, had a nice year, particularly in the power department last year. But in other ways, maybe didn't have the year he would have hoped. And he's been incredibly disruptive so far this year, hitting .429. He's got 8 stolen bases, a perfect 8-for-8 in stolen bases. And when he can do that kind of thing, he's really one of the best table setters in the Big Ten. So he's off to a hot start as well. And then you've got some new faces. Brandon Comilla, a big-time recruit in Illinois' outstanding recruiting class this year, has come on strong. Kellen Sarver, Cam McDonald, a couple of guys, and there's Jack Yalowitz. 2 years ago, Jack Yalowitz was kind of a Big Ten player of the year type of player. Last year maybe was pressing a little bit, trying to do a little bit too much, never really quite got on track, but this year he's off to a nice start, hitting above .300. So, they've got more quality position players, and they have positions for guys right now, because you've got Jacob Campbell, a highly regarded recruit in that recruiting class behind the plate. He's only batted 7 times. Grant Van Scoy was their starting third baseman last year. He has been kind of in a mix of starting and coming off the bench. David Cron is a veteran, also a really athletic catcher, a good catch and throw guy behind the plate. He's been in a reserve role so far. So they've really got kind of an embarrassment of riches offensively, even if maybe there isn't, a Brent Spillane highlighting the offensive attack.
I think that was probably my biggest concern about Illinois coming into this season, was that what were they going to do without Spillane in the heart of the order? It felt at times like they were pretty dependent on him last year. And so far this year, they're answering that question. And I'm interested to see how the Illini do. They got off to a really nice start last year, not quite this good. And kind of that carried them almost through the season. They hit a rough patch in the middle, and that's why they missed the NCAA tournament. But it's a good group, and it's a rather veteran group, as you mentioned, Joe. A lot of older arms back on the mound. So I'll be interested to see where the Illini go from here, because that FAU team is a pretty good team. They just beat this weekend, some of the games they did it in, like on Friday night when they beat Zach Schneider, that's one of the better relievers in the country, I feel like.
Yeah, I think sometimes we undervalue, we being just kind of the general college baseball media, if you will, or college baseball fans even, kind of sometimes undervalue just a really veteran group of guys who have been solid for a long time. And it's easy to kind of get distracted by losing this key piece or that key piece. And don't get me wrong, sometimes that is kind of what's holding up the house of cards, is kind of that one player that everything revolves around. But I think oftentimes we tend to undervalue just a lot of really solid guys. You know, sometimes you prefer to have an entire team full of really solid guys versus a team of big time star power and a bunch of question marks. And I think just Illinois is just a solid team from top to bottom, where they have more guys they trust than they have at bats or innings to give them.
So we got Illinois at 6-0 there. I wanted to talk a little bit about North Carolina State, which is off to a 7-0 start and is coming off of a perfect weekend down in the Coastal Carolinas baseball at the Beach Tournament. And they finished that off by beating Coastal 7-6 in 11 innings on Sunday. They played extra innings also against Kent State on Friday night, won that game 3-2. And, you know, so NC State had to do some extra work this weekend, but they come out of it with three wins. They're 7-0 now. And NC State is a team that under Elliott Avent, in the last few years at least, and going back farther than that too, but has been pretty offensive. You feel good about what they have in their lineup. And then it's a matter of, is there enough pitching there? And this year, coming into the year, it kind of felt like that was a similar story. They have some stars in the lineup, shortstop Will Wilson, who's off to a really nice start. He's hitting .400. He has three home runs already. That's a guy that you're going to see probably go out as a first-round pick. Right now, in his most recent mock draft over at baseballamerica.com, Carlos Collazo had Will Wilson going 9th overall. So we'll see where exactly he ends up later this spring. But that's definitely a player to watch. And then Patrick Bailey, their catcher, a preseason All-American. He's just a sophomore. He's going to be very fun to watch over the next 2 years still. And he homered, hit the walk-off homer. That was his first homer of the year. He's hitting .320. Evan Edwards, another veteran player in that lineup, he's got three bombs already, 13 RBI. So they have some nice pieces in their lineup that are going. But what I've been impressed by is their pitching staff, which to this point has a team ERA of 2.28. Yes, it's very early, and it's not the most traditional of pitching staffs. They have, their rotation might not be the strength of it. I think the bullpen right now is the strength. You've guys like Kent Kleiman and Dalton Feeney that are really good out of the bullpen. And if they can just get enough out of their starting pitchers, I think this NC State team can be pretty dangerous, especially when you combine this good lineup with a potentially deep bullpen. And I think that, so far that formula has definitely worked for them in sweeping Bucknell and then sweeping a pretty good field at the Baseball at the Beach tournament this weekend. But NC State now has another tough week ahead. They have Campbell on Wednesday, and that's a Campbell team that just won a midweek game against East Carolina a week ago and is going to throw Seth Johnson at you in the midweek. And he was up to 98 against East Carolina, and he's a top five rounds arm probably. So that'll be a tough test on Wednesday. And then they welcome Minnesota into Raleigh on the weekend. And while the Gophers have not gotten off to the start that they would have wanted or that I would have expected them to this season, that's still a pretty quality opponent coming in. It's a super regional team from a year ago with a lot of talent. So if NC State's going to remain in the undefeated ranks, they're going to have to prove it this week, or they're going to have to work for it this week with four tough games before they get into ACC play in a week against Pittsburgh. So the Wolfpack were close to the top 25 coming into the year. They're still very close, right on the outside. And with another solid week, they may very well make their top 25 debut next week. And if they don't do it next week, they will eventually work in at some point this season. I'm sure that's it's a program that has just been so consistent in terms of making regionals over the last several years under Elliott Avent, that I'm sure the Wolfpack will definitely continue to make noise as the season continues. So now, as we continue through looking at over the all the weekend action from week two of college baseball. I wanted to give us the opportunity to kind of shout out some of the underrepresented or undercovered stories so far. What else stood out to us over the weekend? So Joe, let's start with you. What stood out to you from the weekend that was?
Well, first of all, my first shout out goes to the UGA promotions team. I went to Athens for the Saturday game. Too long didn't read version of my Saturday in Athens. Emerson Hancock, really good. So there's that. But no, it just they did a banana bread giveaway, which we should just be giving more baked goods away at baseball games. Like that's just I'm just ready to say that now. Like, why is there not like a donuts for like every scoreless inning the pitchers throw? You give away donuts or something, like especially for those double headers where they start at like 10 or 11 a.m. Like, why? I just don't know why we're not doing this. So get at me, promotions teams. I've got ideas. Anyway, so the banana bread thing was a big deal there. Also great music at UGA. Zach Kristofak uses Layla by Eric Clapton. One of my favorite songs is his walkout music, which I thought was outstanding. So there's that. Moving on, though. Kyle Harper at Baylor. Kyle Harper is the guy who has the unenviable task of catching, at least doing the bulk of it so far, while Shea Langeliers is out with his hamate bone injury and the recovery from that. He went 5-for-12 over the weekend, had a two-run homer in the Sunday game. Obviously, Baylor is treading into deeper water this weekend with the Shriners tournament in Houston. That'll be a tough weekend for them. But certainly, if they can get production along those lines from Harper while Langeliers are out, it will help. Kind of will help mitigate his loss. And also will just kind of improve the depth. There's one thing Baylor so far this season has done a really good job of is they've gotten a lot of guys some at-bats, and I feel like they've probably got, 11, 12 guys they feel pretty good about. So a big weekend for him. And then also another shout-out in the state of Texas to Texas State. Speaking of the Shriners tournament, Texas State 5-2 wins over Utah, Missouri State, McNeese, Creighton. None of those are necessarily surefire regional teams, especially with Missouri State hitting the skids a little bit to start the season, but those are all, those aren't nobody. So they've been pretty impressive, and that's been traditionally a pretty good program. You know, Texas State, when they were in the Southland, was kind of Sam Houston State before Sam Houston State was Sam Houston State. You know, Ty Harrington's done a really good job there over the years, and the years, the mid-aughts, I suppose, would be the best place to put it, but when around this time, Paul Goldschmidt was there. They really had that thing rolling in the Southland. And so, it's early to kind of think that it might be that type of season again in San Marcos, but certainly a good start for them. And I think it'll be interesting, Teddy, for you to see when you're in Houston this coming weekend, how well they compete with some teams that are, that are considered a cut above. So I'm certainly looking forward to seeing that as well.
Absolutely. That'll be a fun tournament. And I think that when it got announced that Texas State was going to be in that tournament, a lot of people... we're looking at a field with TCU, A&M, Baylor, Houston, Rice, and then, Texas State is here too. Like, that's a little different. But it's nice to see that they're off to this start. And you're right. I mean, that's a program that has had some big years in the past. So it'll be a step up in competition for them this weekend. But they can really open some eyes if they continue this hot start to the season while they're at Minute Maid Park over the weekend. Dave, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to go far out west, and I'm going to talk about something that's probably gone under the radar for many people, and that's Gary Adcock's Cal Baptist Lancers, who has started the season 9-0. They're the newest member of the WAC Conference. They're in their first year of Division I baseball. Now, I know they've played two northern schools, Northern Illinois and Ohio, in weekend series. And this past Wednesday, they got a big win, their very first victory against a Power 5 team and beating Kansas State 7-6. But what for me is such a compliment to Gary's program early on in Division I is that both weekend series were four-game series. Now, this is a Division II program, and usually Division II programs aren't as deep as Division I when it comes to longevity of pitching. And in their Sunday finales, they've gone with a shutout, 8-0 over Illinois in weekend one, and beating Ohio 8-2 in the fourth game of the weekend series this past weekend. That just goes to show that Gary stepped into Division I play with his team with some depth on the mound. I said this in my preview of the WAC. I think Cal Baptist, even though they're not eligible for the first 4 years for postseason play, I think they're going to really make an impact on what happens, especially with the top tier teams in the WAC. And I think even though they can't play for the championship, I believe they're going to make a dent on who ends up being the champion in the WAC as the season goes. The other shout out is I want to give to my former coach and mentor, George Horton. That was a big sweep of St. Mary's this weekend. St. Mary's came into Eugene. I think Oregon showed why we believe they've got a good pitching staff, because I think that's a good St. Mary's team. The only disappointing thing for me this weekend, Teddy, was that game four was rained out, and that I was really anxious to see who they announced as the duck in game four. Didn't get an opportunity to pitch that game. That's the only thing for me that was disappointing. But shout out to Cal Baptist and obviously University of Oregon for a big sweep of St. Mary's, which was supposed to be a four-game series, but the fourth game got rained out.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to seeing the duck get up on the mound. Maybe later in the season, we'll still be able to see that. But Oregon now, you know, they did only win the one game at Texas Tech last weekend. But to go sweep St. Mary's, which should be one of the best teams in the West Coast Conference, you know, I think they've had a very encouraging couple of weeks there up in Eugene. And it'll be interesting to see how that carries forward for the Ducks this spring. I wanted to mention Navy right-hander Noah Son, who this week on Friday against Air Force was stellar again for the midshipmen. He recorded the first 10 outs of the game via strikeout, finished the night with 14 Ks in six scoreless innings. And in four career appearances, three starts against Air Force, Son is 3-0. He is not allowed to run. 47 strikeouts, 6 walks, 10 hits, 21 innings. That is getting it done against one of your rivals. And Noah Son is a name to know for the draft this year as well. You know, as he was the number one senior in when we did our top 50 players by class. You can check that out over at baseballamerica.com. And he is he throws really hard. And he's going to be an intriguing pick. And, you know, as there are a lot of complications with his military service and how that relates to, you know, how much baseball he can play professionally over the next few years. But he should be able to go out and get picked pretty good. And we'll see where it takes him from there. But just another great outing from the senior against his rival or Navy's rival there against Air in the series against Air Force. Also, the entire Mountain West, speaking of Air Force, which came back after losing that game, won the series against Air Force, the whole Mountain West this year through two weekends has been pretty impressive. Last year, it was a conference that finished ninth in RPI, which is really its best finish since realignment robbed that conference of Utah, TCU, and BYU. Overall, the Mountain West this year is 34-16. They got some nice wins this weekend. Nevada, last year's regular season champs, swept Long Beach State at Blair Field. Fresno State went 3-0 in the Tony Gwynn Classic. San Diego State went 2-1 in that tournament. Everyone in that league is at least 500. And I think that's definitely a conference to keep your eye on out west this year. There's some intriguing teams out there. And you know, it's been a one-bid league the last few years. We'll see if they can change that this year. And as they put together these nice non-conference weekends, that only can help them in terms of RPI. And, of course, it's very early to think about that, but at the same time, it's never too early to start thinking about RPI. So those are my shout-outs. I think that, you know, as we wrap up this weekend and look forward, week three is to me always one of the best weekends of the season. You're looking at a lot of teams challenging themselves after, you know, the first couple weeks, looking forward to conference play coming up. That this is a huge weekend. Joe mentioned the Shriners College Classic in Houston, which I'll be at. Joe will be at the Frisco College Classic, also down in Texas, a fun tournament. And Dave, you're headed out to Clemson, South Carolina, annually one of the best rivalry series in the country. So we are excited for the weekend to come in college baseball. And we're excited to come back and talk with you about that next week here on the podcast. So make sure you are subscribed to the podcast on your favorite podcast listening app. And then you can that'll just slide in there for you next week. And we'll be wrapping up week three of the college baseball season, already moving along at a nice rapid clip. Until then, make sure to check out everything over at baseballamerica.com. Today, you can find the full top 25 there. Among other weekend content, my off-the-bat column is up. And we'll have stuff, again, throughout the week there. And you can follow us on Twitter. I am at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe_on_sports. And Dave is at Dave Serrano 11. So that'll do it for us today on the Baseball America College Podcast. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Dave and Joe for joining me today. And we'll be back here next week for more college baseball talk.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.